This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM 1240 KQEN, covering lots of different topics around the Umpqua Valley and what's going on and at the forefront. Well, fire season began this morning at 12:01, and we're here to talk about it with Rachel Pope, Public Information Officer of the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on the Rachel and Kyle show during the summer.
Yeah, there we go. Absolutely. We'll get a parking spot for you soon. Fire season begins at 12:01. Nobody probably set their alarm and got up, and, you know, it's a designation, and there's a lot that goes into this that gets very complex because you're dealing with land that is privately owned. You're dealing with land on the federal, state level, county level, other things. So you've got a lot to keep track of and a lot of protocols in place to make the system the DFPA uses work.
Exactly. So we work with state, we work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and we protect BLM lands, you know. So there's a lot of public use restrictions, and that goes into the announcement of fire season in the Douglas District, and in coordination with Umpqua National Forest. Now, again, that's federal lands, and they have their own restrictions, and they announce when fire season starts on their protected area. But we still coordinate. We still communicate with everybody and let everybody know, hey, we're implementing these public use restrictions. The fire danger levels are out there on the district now, so we coordinate together.
So as what goes into deciding exactly, essentially, when to pull the trigger?
We're looking at fuel moisture levels, the relative humidity, the duration of the temperature that's out there. They like to call them energy release component data facts that Pat Scripp and Aaron Whiteley, our unit forester within the district, are analyzing. And they do that together with meteorologists through the state that we work in, hand in hand with ODF, to monitor these different fuel levels. And when it drops down to a specific parameter and fire danger levels and the ignitions of a wildland fire are higher, that's when we determine that it's fire season on the district.
So that really is something to keep in mind, because, for instance, you might look around and go, gosh, it's 20 degrees cooler than it was a week or so ago. Why start now? But it is all related to the impact of all the earlier heat and moisture or lack of.
Exactly. So yes, it's cooler outside. It's nicer. Some of us are wearing a light sweater. But if you look at that grass out there, it's dry. It's brown. And that moisture level or content that's in that fuel is gone, which means it's more likely to catch on fire.
And even people around that are, you know, city dwellers, I've been using my sprinkler system more. And I can tell, you know, things were lush and green a few weeks ago, and now I'm pushing the sprinkler a bit more.
Exactly, which we're seeing. And with that drop in relative humidity yesterday, too, I think we're down about that 23%, which means there's not that much moisture in the air, which means those fuels aren't absorbing it either. Even if you're using sprinklers or it's raining, it's limiting that amount, and it's escaping faster, which means things can burn, which you could see of the four fires that we reported that we responded to yesterday.
Yeah, we're going to talk about those fires in a bit. Now, we are entering today, and the industrial fire precaution level is level one, right?
Correct. We're at IFPL 1 for all of industry. So there's certain regulations that go into that, times that industry can do things, times that they can't. And there's waivers that they can qualify, that they deal directly with our industrial forester, Mike Jackson, that's been doing this for over 20 years. But they have to meet certain safety parameters. That also means once we're in fire season that they have to have fire suppression, water tender. They have to have certain fire equipment at the industrial area just in case something could happen that they can respond.
Now, for the general public, talk about the fire prevention measures that are now in effect in the Douglas District.
Now that we're in fire season, that means that there are public use restrictions that are in place. We are at level low, which means that there's no time constraints to when you can do certain activities. It's more, we need you to be aware that a fire can happen. Make sure you have your fire tools. Make sure you have a charged garden hose. And also know that smoking is prohibited while traveling, except in vehicles on improved roads, boats in the water, and other designated locations. So what does that mean? mean, you're smoking in your car, but if you're on a grassy road, just pay attention. You know, that's now prohibited. Backyard debris burning, including the use of burn barrels, is also now prohibited. So you're having the s'mores and that backyard barbecue. If you're in the Douglas District in our protection jurisdiction, that is now regulated and restricted. And that's that open wood burning campfires. You can use a fuel powered burner, which like those propane and those smaller gas burners that are out there, those are still allowed. It's those open burning with that wood burn or the chip burns that create embers that could catch in the air and the wind and catch something on fire, since we are susceptible to a wildland fire happening. And then also those charcoal barbecues. If you're at a residential site that's in like a paved or has concrete slab or even a graveled rocks area, you could use that, no problem. But if you're on an area that's grass, has dry vegetation, you really want to pay attention to that. Even a wood deck that's dried out, that could also easily catch on fire. So we're really just bringing, you know, that common sense awareness to everybody to pay attention and to be safe.
Now, you mentioned one thing that I hadn't really thought about when you talked about the backyard debris burning, that could actually, depending on where you are and what's going on, could even impact the use of s'mores.
Yeah, so exactly.
You are now like the s'mores police.
I guess in a way. I hope that they don't come after me now.
Wow. But that's something to think about, because people go out on camping, you know, in areas that mm-hmm. would be on land that is under the designation now, and they do... That might be something they hadn't thought of.
Exactly. And no, but again, you could use those fuel propane tanks. And my husband and I do candles and use a candle to do our marshmallows instead of that open wood burning flame too. So there's alternatives to it. You just got to be creative and be safe.
Or avoid it altogether because it's high calories. So I don't know.
We'll just run it off like Kyle Bailey does.
So what else do we need to know now? We're getting... a few weeks out from 4th of July, what about fireworks?
Fireworks are definitely prohibited in forested lands protected by DFPA. Those are also prohibited on BLM and the Forest Service. Fireworks and trees are a no-go.
And some of those even are really prohibited year-round, right?
Yes, majority of them are prohibited year-round in the forest. I mean, even if it's not fire season, it just takes one spark to light those trees on fire. It's just dangerous. It impacts us, the community, and our wildlife that's out there. Also, sky lanterns are prohibited. You can't use those. Also, exploding targets and tracer ammunition are prohibited at all times. And open fires are prohibited, like we just spoke about those charcoal fires, including campfires, and are allowed at designated sites only.
Now, for people that are out traveling in the forest, talk about what roads they should be on or not in terms of dealing with vegetation.
Yeah, anything that has dried vegetation out there, grass, brush, shrubs, don't drive over it. That is now going to be... prohibited. Off-road driving is allowed with landowner permission only right now while we're in the level low. Once we hit that moderate, it will be restricted at all times. So just like we promote vehicle maintenance, make sure that catalytic converter, your tailpipe is good. That heat transfer, radiate heat onto that vegetation can cause a spark. Those BBs that can shoot out of your tailpipe from that catalytic converter can also catch on the grass and cause a spark and a wildland fire that you don't want to be the starter of.
And oftentimes, from past history, sometimes vehicles that are doing that, the driver doesn't seem to notice.
And that happens, and you look in the rearview mirror, and hey, there's a fire. Or you get to your location, turn on the news, and see that we had a large fire in Douglas County, and you were in that area maybe an hour ago.
And yeah, they'll be looking for you. So that's a big concern there. What are some other things people should keep in mind?
Keep in mind the weed eating. Right now, you could go out there and use a weed eater, but pretty soon when we increase those levels to moderate, it will be allowed and time restricted. So I know I converted all my weed eaters that were gas powered and metal bladed to now electric power and stringed. We also changed our lawnmower that we were using before, sold that, and now have an electric lawnmower. So just making those simple steps and adjustments right now while we're in that low level, making sure you're mowing their lawn, making sure you're getting rid of that vegetation around your home and working on that defensible space and being mindful. Also, if you don't have a fire extinguisher, I would suggest take this time now to get out and get a fire extinguisher and just have it on you. It's always better to just be safe than sorry.
So I don't want to wade into the debate on lawnmowers in terms of gas versus electric, but I have to say the idea of mowing the grass and having no sound I can't wrap my head around that.
It's a little bit different. And then that's the other thing too. So they were trying to sell me on it, on this lawnmower. And I'm like, okay, let's hear your pitch. Like, oh, you could use this during fire season, even when there are restrictions. Actually, that's incorrect. So just because it's electric doesn't mean that the blades on the lawnmower are stringed. So that's why we specifically say that with the weed eaters, if it's a plastic stringed weed eater, you can use it. If it's a metal blade, you can't use it. So same goes for those lawnmowers. Just because it's electric powered, it still has those metal blades, which could strike a rock, which can cause a spark and cause a fire.
All right, more when we come back. Rachel Pope from the Douglas Forest Protective Association. Beginning day of fire season. We'll talk more when we come back. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson at 1. Umpqua Valley Live, talking arts, entertainment, and cultural activities at 4. On Mondays, Inside Douglas County, Brett Branscombe from the Elliott State Research Forest will be with us. That's at Monday's program at 1230. Talking about the beginning of fire season, Rachel Pope with the Douglas Forest Protective Association in here this afternoon because fire season began officially today. How much, when your staff puts this all together and lines out the date, how much advance warning do you have?
You know, since we are monitoring those moisture levels, maybe we have 3 to 5 days in advance when we're looking at it. Pat likes to be accurate with that. I know some different districts have an exact date. Hey, June 1st, we're going into season. Pat likes a little bit of wiggle room to give everybody that availability. Hey, June is here. We know fire season is coming. Let's start preparing. And then give you guys that notice. Hey, now the moisture levels are where it's at. It is dangerous. Let's then now put on the fire season.
And yesterday, though, we had an interesting situation, and I had to chuckle during the day. Fire season began today, yet we had fires yesterday.
Exactly. So it kind of shows you that our models were accurate when we're looking at it. And it's a reason why we went into fire season. So it shows that it works and the data that we're using is working. We were off by a day, but hey, we're in season now. So
And you had a lot. Talk about some of these fires yesterday.
So we had 4 small fires, actually 5 small fires. So I reported on 4, and then we had a 5th one that started off of the exit 108 in Myrtle Creek near the Myrtle Creek Bridge last night around 9 p.m. And that one was about 1/8 of an acre that our South unit responded to and got that out quickly. Rurals also responded to that. Earlier yesterday, we had the Rice Creek fire. That was an estimated 2 to 3 acres. That's in our central unit was on that. And then we had a Green Valley fire. That was 1/4 acre out there in the Oakland area. Our north unit was on that. And then we had 1/4 acre fire that was in Dairy Loop, which was also in our central unit. And then we had the Mount Reuben 1-acre fire that was also in our south unit. So everybody in our Douglas district for DFPA was pretty busy yesterday. And all of us, including rural responders and sheriffs, even Douglas Electric was on that Green Valley fire to be there and get everything out, get that power down. So it was a busy day. I don't think any of us were quite prepared for yesterday, but we were ready and ready to roll in out there, just getting that dust off of us.
Well, and I think just looking over these incidents, the fact that you're pretty serious about hitting these pretty hard, because you might, somebody who's not familiar with the area and how things work might think that's a lot of people to send to 1/4-acre or 2-acre fire. But the point, if I'm correct, is to keep it at that level and not look around and go, oh, wait, it's 200.
Exactly. And that's our motto here on the district and our agreement with the county and how DFPA responds is what we're known for is initial attack or initial response. We are first responders. So as soon as that alert goes off and our dispatch is aware, they are dispatching our resources that are out and ready in our engines to respond to those fires and get them out quickly and as soon as possible and keep them as small as possible. As we know, 1/4-acre fire with the right conditions can turn in a 3-acre fire, 10-acre fire, 20-acre fire. And then we're dealing with evacuations and properties that might be in danger from that. And that's exactly what we're trying to limit.
And you also, at least in some of these cases, kept folks there, at least percentage of folks there, for quite a while, making sure that it really was out.
Yeah, as soon as we get that, what we call that fire knockdown, or that means those flames are down. And then, so once those flames are down, there's still heat in that fire source. So when we're saying they're mopping up, that's what our guys and gals are doing. They're churning up that land, and they're looking for all heat sources and making sure that it's extinguished and eradicated. So if a wind could come in, it can't relight again or reburn that area. And then now we're dealing with a whole nother issue and having to send resources out there again. So that's what we're talking about when we're getting it knocked down, or that forward progress is over, it's out, that fire's not moving anymore, it's not growing anymore. Now they're churning it, eradicating all that heat, and it's safe to now put it in patrol status. So once we have a fire in patrol status, we're going to do 3 checks. Every day we're going to go out and do a check. They're going to look for heat. If there's heat in it, they're going to put it out, and then they're going to do some more patrol status heat and checks.
Now, it's kind of laborious work. I mean, very exacting. You know, if somebody asked me to stand there for a few hours and turn, you know, a shovel over or piece of equipment periodically, I think I would get bored. But yet it's something that has to be done.
It's something that has to be done. And we have a lot of firefighters that really hate the mop-up process. That's what we call it, because it is so tedious and because it's time consuming. And we work in a grid pattern to make sure that you're covering every inch of that fire and making sure that you're churning over everything. But it's necessary, and that's how we keep the district safe. So for all of my wildland firefighters that are out there doing that mop-up grind, I appreciate all of you and your hard work, and thank you.
So now, being in fire season, is your summer hiring process, did you already have everybody in place, or is that still continuing?
We still have some applications that are coming in, but we are onboarding all of our first years and also our returning seasonal hires on Monday. And so we're going to have a week-long training for them. We'll end it on Friday with a field day. So you will be seeing a lot more engines out there. You will be seeing DFPA uniformed employees grabbing lunch from you, grabbing their water bottles in the morning from your location. So thank you for your support from the community, all of our firefighters that are out there too. I know you guys treat them very well, so expect them to be out there soon.
Now, I know it varies year to year sometimes, and maybe it's later in the season when this goes in place. What about sometimes you have aircraft at a couple locations that are essentially positioned there just in case?
Yeah, so we have our own Cessna or Air Attack airplane that goes out. That is 24/7 whenever we need to utilize an Air Attack, get them up in the air and check for smokes and stuff like that. But then our helicopters come on the district July 1st is our contract. So we'll have Five Mike Mike. I know he's our community all-star. He has so many followers, our Five Mike Mike. And he's stationed out of Myrtle Creek Airport. And then we'll have another helicopter on the district that's also through ODF severity, so he's not necessarily DFPA's helicopter, but he will be stationed out of Kellogg. And there's also talks about having a different helicopter in the district that will be stationed out of the Roseburg Airport. Those details are to come soon. Once I know those, we'll probably do a press release, but that one will most likely be under ODF, not DFPA, since they pay for that resource.
Now, you guys, you've got all these different agencies and everything. Talk about how DFPA is funded.
DFPA is funded through protection dues that the county pays for our services, and through landowners, and then also through our contracts with providing fire protection to BLM and the BIA, or Bureau of Indian Affairs. And so, again, we are a local firefighting agency. We're recognized through the state, so some of the funding comes out of the large fire budget through the state too, that goes to cover operational cost afterwards. So there's 3 different major ways that go into funding DFPA, but we are also a nonprofit, a local government agency.
And DFPA has been going over 100 years, is that right?
Yeah, as of, we were established 1912, so that puts us at 112 years this year. It's an honor to be a part of a legacy and just be a part of the community. It's fantastic.
So if people want to check things in terms of all the data and information, talk about your website.
Oh, so if you want to know about our regulations and our public use restrictions and the industrial restrictions that are out there, you could visit our website at dfpa.net. On the very home page, I put a link on there that says know before you go. If you click on that link, it's going to bring up our restrictions in the county, but also it will bring up all the other fire danger levels throughout the state and other counties and what their restrictions are too. And that is housed by ODF, and that's on oregon.gov to access that if you want to go directly to them.
Rachel Pope from the Douglas Forest Protective Association, 1258.